Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey everyone, on this week's episode of 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, I'm joined by the legendary goaltender Glenn Hull. Hall of Famer. During his life, he played over 1,000 games in a row. That'll never be touched. Incredible, an absolute legend of the position. As always, you can find me, all the socials, Mike McKenna, at MikeMcKenna56, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And the Super Bowl, it's right around the corner. If you're looking to place a bet on any of the sports going on, betonline.ag is the best and only place to lock it in. I'm thinking the Rams and the Browns. Why not? Browns, best helmets in all of football. And the Rams, you know, a former hometown team of mine in St. Louis, so we'll go with those two. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any other place online. And there's always the online casino as well. So head to betonline.ag today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Support for 6 Degrees is also brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. I know it's one of those subjects that we don't talk about often, but I got to tell you, the Lawnmower 3.0, listen to this baby rev up. You know what's cool? It's got a light on it. It's not always easy to see what you're doing, but with the Lawnmower 3.0, you can't miss a spot. It's an unbelievable product. I can't imagine that anybody would have a loved one that wouldn't appreciate this thing. It's why the Manscaped team has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months, a year and a half, perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code 6degrees at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code 6degrees. Try it. Guarantee you're going to like it. If you're looking for goalie coaching, I'm available for that through 44 Vision Hockey. You go to 44visionhockey.com, fill out a registration form, put my name down. We will get your clips from Hockey TV, from Live Barn. We'll upload them. I'll diagram them. I'll go through with the perspective of a former pro player, somebody like myself who has a background in coaching, and we meet over Zoom to go over all your clips, to take your game where you want to go, mentally, physically, technically, you name it, 44visionhockey.com. Check it out. Put my name in. I'd be happy to work with you. And now, going on to a legend of our position of goaltending, of hockey, the Hall of Famer, Glenn Hull.
Not comfortable in a crowd or anything, and but in the goal I was really comfortable. It was a position and a place I liked to be.
So you really enjoyed it and felt like it was home, right? You could tune out all the surrounding stuff and just go out there and play hockey. Is that what it felt like to you?
Yeah, that's what it was all about, and I'm sure it was the same for you, was it not?
Yeah, very much so. I just always enjoyed being there so much. And it's funny when people ask me how you perform in front of 8,000, 20,000, however many people, it just felt natural to me. Did you have that same feeling?
Well, yeah, I did. And I tell the story about how you handle the noise in the Chicago Stadium. And I said, well, you just blank it out. And she said, like heck you can blank. Don't tell me you can blank out the noise in the Chicago Stadium. And I said, well, there was the one guy I could hear. And she said, I thought so. What was he yelling? I said, he was yelling, cold beer, get your cold beer. and I heard him. He was at every game, and I heard him every time he opened his mouth. Yeah. Well,
what's funny about that, though, is that you had the reputation for getting sick before games and throwing up. So was that nervousness just about performing on the ice?
To a degree, and I found that I played better if I put pressure on myself. I still say that pressure is the greatest thing an athlete can have because it pushes them to the notch higher, and the pressure is what does that. And so I put pressure on myself, and I found that I played better if I threw up, and I didn't throw up peas and carrots. I threw up. I'd take a drink of water, and I'd gag more than I'd throw up. But yeah, I liked the feeling of putting pressure on myself.
Well, there's certainly no more in any other position in sports than what we do in feeling pressure. It's interesting how athletes seem to find different forms of motivation like that. And I've talked to a lot of different guys, and whether it's throwing up or visualization, and everybody's got a different way to prepare, it seems like. And obviously yours was very different in throwing up, and that kind of became a calling card.
Yeah, and you talked about visualization, and I thought everybody did it when I didn't realize it was something new. I certainly did it. I could close my eyes and I could see, and it was the top guys that were going to score on you, and you could see the way they played their game, and I could just see everything, every little move they were going to put on me.
So before games, were you actively thinking about the players that you were going to be play against, what their tendencies and techniques were?
I was thinking about them the day before. Yeah, I was thinking, and I knew the top guys, the guys that I had to be concerned about, and like whether they were the goal scorer, they were the guy who were going to move the puck to the goal scorer. And I enjoyed that part of the game.
I was tempted when I first got on the line with you to call you just Mr. Goalie for the rest of this, but try to be a little less formal than that. One of the things that's attributed to you is what we call the butterfly now. And I don't know if that's what you called it when you first started doing it, but what was your reasoning and your theory behind dropping to the ice to make saves?
Well, it was common sense. Like, we were taught by the experts, and the experts knew nothing. They had never played goal.
Some people would argue they still don't.
Oh, yeah, well, this is what was so difficult for them to. They wanted you to have your legs tight together, so you didn't let in that in between the legs, and they'd say, well, the hell, you stop 10 on the post because he got the legs wide enough that you can at least move. And they didn't understand that. They knew nothing. And it was difficult. And, but I just decided to play my own game. If I didn't do it, somebody else would have done it in the future. Because it was common sense. It was it's how you stop the puck, and that's what the goalkeepers was interested in. And I'm sure you felt you must have had some kind of a way of preparing. And I think all of us had different ways of preparing.
Well, for myself, you know, not being able to have watched you play growing up, I watched the guys that took what you started, and it's all evolved into what it is today. You know, we're on the ice all the time. You know, rebounds, correct me if I'm wrong, you thought were the responsibility of your defensemen to take care of, and that having your pads behind your stick was really important. Could you just, you know, talk a little bit about that?
Well, like, you're not strong enough to hold the stick out in front unless you're deflecting a tie or something. But the shot itself will will go through your stick. And so you had to have something backing it up. And so I found that just against the pads as you moved, and weaknesses, everybody's got a weakness, and but you got to play to your strengths.
Mm-hmm. You really talk about balance being so important for goaltending, and that's so true even for today's game. And you also had a really unique approach to how you did breakaways. And I find that very interesting because, for me, breakaways were something that I always really enjoyed. I thought, especially when we started to do penalty shots after overtimes now, I love doing shootouts. And what was your theory on breakaways? Because I know it was a little bit different than other people at the time.
Well, like, I wanted to get high position. And like I say, when you'd come from the post to a high position, you'd stop in the front foot, and you'd do a little dance up high. And that let you come back to the post. Because I said and like I talked about the experts, what they taught us was to go parallel to the crease. Well, but if the guy held the puck long enough, and we had a couple of guys who took advantage of me by just coming in on a breakaway and just going almost to the boards, and if I was going parallel to the crease from a high position, then all of a sudden he had an open net to shoot at. And so I found out that you did a little dance at the top and you come back to post.
Something else that I noticed too is that you had a really interesting way of putting your skate not inside the post, but the outside. What led you to the decision to do that? Because, again, you were very methodical and it was a conscious decision. So what helped you come to the conclusion that that was the best way for you to play goal?
Even at that time, you know, they were coming around the net and they were trying to jam it in. And I found that by having the foot on the outside of the post, that they couldn't move me, and so it didn't jam, and I got it into a good position as soon as the puck went out in front.
Today we call that the overlap, and again, this is something that you were doing, I mean, years and years ago, and now it's commonplace for us, and it's not just on wraparounds. We'll do it when someone's driving the net towards us. And really for the same reasoning, though, so that we're not jammed up against the post. So it's funny how what you pioneered in the 50s is still something today that we're working on and trying to actively get better at.
Well, are they hooking the foot around the post now?
We will do it on a drive. We won't usually do it on a wraparound. So that part's a little bit different, but we still do it when someone is attacking the net because it keeps us free of the post and we're able to seal and to still be able to move.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's been a great journey for myself. And the part I enjoyed the most and the most comfortable I've ever been was in the net. And
There's one thing. I can't talk to you without bringing up the 502 game Ironman streak that you had in the National Hockey League. And you did it completely without wearing a mask, played through stitches, cuts, I'm sure bruises and strains and pulls. What was your mentality during that long of a stretch, playing through those difficult times? What was going through your mind?
I just enjoyed playing. And if I counted the minors and junior hockey and everything, I believe I played 1,026 consecutive games.
Incredible.
But I was lucky, and most of our injuries at that time was puck-related and usually face which didn't keep you out of the lineup if you got cut. I've been hit 3 times real hard in the face. And like I say, it didn't keep you out of the lineup. And but in those days, that's, you did, because it was what the old keepers did before you, and they didn't lie down there and whine. I saw one here the other day, and he got hit in the shoulder, some damn thing, and you'd have thought he had been killed, and because he laid there and he whined and whined, and I thought they were going to have to carry him off, but they finally got up. And yeah, but I don't watch a lot of hockey because it bothers me sometimes how the goalkeeper reacts to the different plays. And I keep thinking, well, you should be looking at the old goalkeepers. That's what I did. I looked, I said, well, the old guys had set the standards, and so and they got up, so that's why I got up, not mm-hmm. because I was tough or anything else. I got up because they had set the standard.
Mm-hmm. So when you would get hit, you mentioned a couple times that you did take a puck pretty hard to the face. What would happen? They'd stop the game, and you'd go off and get stitched up and come back? Would that take a while sometimes?
Yeah, it would. It really would. I remember Johnny Bauer. He was playing in Cleveland, and I was playing in Indianapolis in the American League. And we had some kind of a hockey function at Toronto, and I told him, I said, John, I don't know if you remember, I said, when in the American League, I said, I was the other end when you got hit, and I said, I think you lost 7 teeth. And his wife Nancy was there, and she said, 9. And I said, oh, John, I said, if there were 9 teeth laying on the ice, I said, I'm glad they were at your end. And but he went off, and he came back and finished the game. Mm. Yeah, and he was a little lighter with 9 teeth gone. So,
did you have a relationship with other goaltenders that had played at that time?
I loved Gump Worsley and Johnny Bauer when they used to have the bench clearing brawls. We used to always go up to center ice and talk to each other. How's the family? And the goal that so and so scored against you last week, how did he score it? And you would discuss different moves and different ways that they were scoring goals. And
so you guys are talking shop at the red line while there's a bench clearing brawl going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it was, and I loved both of them. I really did. And Gump, he was a comedian also. Like I'm sure you've heard the story when he played in New York. They asked him which team gave him the most trouble, and he said the Rangers. And that was his own team, eh? And that's basically the way it was. The defensemen can be such a help, but they can be a problem too, part of the problem. And you have to educate the defensemen. You know, that's tough work. And when you can see it, you can basically stop it. So let me see it if you can. And you pick up rebound.
Was that something you did a lot of during your career, talking to your defensemen and your other teammates and trying to help them do things that you preferred seeing in front of you during a game?
Yeah. You would let them know which you like. Say, look, if I can see it, I can stop it. And you guys, but don't drag the stick. It really bothered me when a defenseman would drag his stick out there. So it's going to deflect, so it's going to be me who eats it. He's playing it pretty safe. He doesn't hold it in front of him, so it comes up off his stick into his face, but he doesn't mind if it comes off of his stick into my face. So I tried to talk to him.
Well, it's not just deflected pucks you had to worry about. It's also, partway through your career, players started to use curved sticks. And so you had guys out there with the big banana hook. And how did that change the way you practiced and the way you'd stop pucks in games?
Well, all of a sudden, instead of the puck coming through, like, they could cut the puck, you know, and make it work a little bit. It was like a knuckleball, and but they could cut it so it would drop, and that bothered me, because one that's going to hit the glass on the true shot, it's going to hit the glass or the screen or whatever you had back there, and so you would leave it when it was up there, and all of a sudden it would drop in and cut the crossbar, and so that bothered me. You had to play the shots a little different, but it was interesting. It was always interesting in goal.
If you love scratchers from the Virginia Lottery, you'll really love the new Lucky Number Scratcher. 32 chances to win $500,000 plus 4 bonus games. Stop by your closest retailer and check it out. For odds and more information, visit VALottery.com.
We got a couple other folks that we want to talk about. Skin Effects Wraps. Mark Magnanti out of Rochester, New York, does a fantastic job creating wraps for your mask. A great way to change the design on your mask. If you change teams, if you just want a new paint job, it is a really cost-effective way to be able to do that, to change your look. And Mark does a fantastic job. And last season, when I would occasionally practice with the Vegas Golden Knights, my mask just didn't look great. I had an old Senators mask, and I thought, you know what? I want to look the part out here. I got in touch with Mark at his Instagram page, SkinFXWraps, and we went from there. He created a design. It looks amazing. I was happy to sport it. So if you're looking for something to make your helmet look good, get in touch with Mark. Again, SkinFXWraps. He'll take care of you. Another friend of the show, Hico Sticks. HECO, standing for hand-eye coordination. This device has 3 prongs on it. They're each different colors. You call out the color as you throw it to a partner. You call out which hand to catch it with. It's all hand-eye coordination. I used it late in my career, the HECO stick, to make sure I was staying ahead of the curve when it came to hand-eye coordination. And now today, my daughters and I love to play with it in the backyard, by the pool. Hey, it floats. Why not? But it really helps them build that hand-eye coordination. It's a great tool. If you go to HECOSticks.com, use the promo code 6DMM56. That's going to get you 10% off on your order. Again, HECOSticks.com.
Did you enjoy practice?
No, I hated practice.
Oh, really?
I liked practice till I was probably 22, 23 years old when I was learning something. But when I wasn't learning anything, practice was stupid. In fact, it hurt me because all of a sudden you were hitching up and you shouldn't have been. You wanted to stay deep in your crouch, and the crouch was always important. I found that I liked it really, really deep, and I was told not to in junior hockey. Then I was lucky enough to get to Windsor across the river from Detroit, and when Sawchuk was at his prime, when he was at his very best, and he played out of quite a low crouch too, eh? And I just liked watching what the other goalkeepers were doing and seeing the things that I thought worked for them, and so you would be a little bit copycat, I believe.
If you didn't like practice very much, did any of your coaches ever give you a hard time about it? Because you had to protect yourself, I'm sure, too, which, like you said, you start to pull up a little bit and you're not as aggressive as you would be in a game.
Yeah.
Were they tough on you?
Most of the coaches weren't very good. I was lucky enough to play for Scotty Bowman. And Scotty, he was the smartest. He was way ahead of his time, and he knew what was good for me, and so he pretty much let me do what I wanted to do, and he never practiced me late or hard, and that was a great plan for him. And Len Patrick was such a perfect general manager. He was so good to the guys, and we were treated so well in St. Louis, and I think that's why Chicago is going out of their way to be super nice to us now, because they realize how we were treated when we played there, which wasn't very good.
Really? So your experience in Chicago wasn't nearly as nice as it was as St. Louis when you got there?
Playing, we had a good team, and I loved to play in Chicago, but we weren't treated well.
That's tough to hear. I mean, nowadays they've got food waiting for us at every corner, and we're just pampered.
Well, it was the general manager and coaches that made it tough. It certainly wasn't the owners. The owners didn't have much to do with the hockey team. They'd drop in. Some of them would drop in now and again. But like Jim Norris was such a good guy and enjoyed it. But he never put his hockey ideas in that the coaches should use.
I'd like to go in a little bit different direction here and ask you about equipment for a little bit. And, you know, now our stuff is all foam and synthetic materials, but what you were using back then was natural leather. It was stuffed with deer hair. What were your preferences in your equipment?
Well, we didn't. The equipment people, they thought they knew how to make equipment. They had no idea what kind of equipment to make and anything, but they were telling us, no, this is the way it's got to be. You've got to use it like this. And I said, no, I don't want it that way. I don't want it that way. This is the way I want it. Can you make something like that? And I said, no. So they never made good equipment. They'd give you a bunch of garbage and the skates. I ended up going from Tack to Bauer because they had such a good counter in the heel that it give you such good control of your skates and such good balance. So I really, really enjoyed the Bauer skate, and they had a little wider blade. It wouldn't bend as easy. In those days, we used to split, and if it was the right foot that I used to use a lot to stop the puck, and so it'd bend the blade and everything. It was tough to get sharpened, and there were a lot of weaknesses with the equipment, but the equipment people, for some reason, they thought they knew more than the goalkeeper about what the equipment they should be having. And like you say, the old pads, they used to get you a new pair of pads in the playoffs so you could take the pictures. And at training camp, we played in these old arenas, and there'd be always water on the ice, and so you would soak them up. And so when training camp was over, the pads were ruined. They were finished, but you had to play all year with them until playoffs.
Did you prefer a shorter pad or a longer pad when you played?
I used to have them cut down, a little bit taken off of the inside high. I took a bad cut over top of the pad. The equipment people, I remember even Kineski, who made the pads and the good pads, he was telling me what lengths I should have. And I was saying, no, I want this length. And everybody seemed to know more than the goalkeeper. And, and they really thought they did about everything. And
Well, it's all become so customized now. We can get anything we want down to the colors and graphics and the shape of it, the break of the glove. And so much of what you guys wore was really just off the shelf and modified, which is amazing to me because there's so few guys nowadays who they just don't tinker with the gear like they used to. You know, you had to find creative solutions a lot of times, right?
Oh, you sure did. And it bothered you when somebody would come in and when you weren't there. And then correct your equipment. And that'd be just some friend of the trainer or whatever come in there and he'd tighten up your glove or whatever. And I used to tell the trainers, I said, don't let anybody sit in my spot and don't let anybody touch my equipment.
Well, you went almost all of your career without wearing a mask.
Yeah, I wore a mask in St. Louis for a couple of years, I think 2.5 years.
Did you find the transition to wearing a mask difficult? Because you had a Lefty Wilson at first and did some practicing with it, but when you eventually switched, was it tough to get into one?
Yeah, it was tough to know how to use. I had to learn, you look out the top of your mask, the top of the eyes, you keep down, and that way you can see behind you, eh? Like, just to drop the eyes, you can see behind you, and so you'd look out, and I used to tell everybody, I didn't have to know how many pigeons were up in the rafters, it was just enough that you could see the opposition and the puck. So I really looked out the top of my eyes.
Well, there actually were pigeons in the building in the St. Louis Arena, though. That's the building that I grew up in watching games. My dad and grandpa have been off-ice officials there for years. What do you remember about the St. Louis Arena?
Well, it was really a beautiful arena for the fans because the seats were so steep that the fans were right on top of the game, and it was perfect that way. And the fans were so good in St. Louis. The fans themselves gave us an advantage of half a goal a game, and because they weren't quiet and reserved like they seem to be now. They would yell when they wanted to yell and boo when they wanted to boo. Yeah.
Did it seem kind of magical going to the Cup Finals right away in St. Louis when you got there?
Well, we just had to win the expansion division. Mm-hmm. That's how we got in. It wasn't that we had worked ourselves into it by being all together with the original six. It was the original six that established their contender for the finals, and it was expansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm being from St. Louis, though, even if it may have been from the expansion side of it, I know that that cemented hockey in town, just having the chance to go to the finals like that. You know, what you did and what those teams did have created a hockey community in St. Louis that now, almost 50 years later, we've got kids being drafted in the first round, and we would have never guessed this, and a lot of that's due to those original years. So we owe a lot of thanks to you.
Well, again, conditions were perfect to play there.
You have so many things in your career that were successful, from the Vezina trophies to the All-Star selections. When you look back at your career, what are you most proud of?
Well, I never won the Vezina.
I screwed that one up.
They called it the Vezina when I played, but it was the Jennings Trophy. It was for the goals against. Right. It had nothing to do with being the top goalkeeper. It was the goalkeeper who played in the best team who won the Vezina at that time. And
let me rephrase that then. So, over your course of your career, with all the accolades and the All-Star selections, the winning seasons, the shutouts, the Iron Man streak, what are you most proud of, and what are your best moments you felt like in the crease?
I just like to be there. I never thought about all those things, and I was, like I mentioned before, that is a position that I was the most comfortable in. I was never more comfortable than when I was in the goal. And I didn't really think about how many games I had played or how many shutouts I had. And you would, when you retire, you think about those things. But when you're playing, you simply played one game at a time. And if the results were such that you try to forget, well, then you try to forget. And again, you remembered the good moves you made, and you tried to utilize the good moves. But it was all about simply learning the position.
Just one final thing I want to ask you about, and it's a famous quote that you had, that you told him that you were out painting the barn and you couldn't come to the phone or be connected. Is there really truth to that story when they were trying to get you to come play again in St. Louis, that you just told him, I'm out painting the barn?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was doing. And we didn't have a phone at the farm, and they would contact my wife, and she was the one who said, well, he's out painting the barn. And but that's exactly what I was doing. And we mentioned before that training camp wasn't a fun position for a goalkeeper. We had so many good things going for us, and training camp was not one of them. I didn't learn anything. I kept in shape, was in better shape the first day I was at training camp than I was 2 weeks after, because I was hitching, and we talked about all of those things. And I just enjoyed the position. I didn't care. And as long as I was playing hockey, I loved the minors as much as, well, you played quite a while in the minors yourself.
I have, absolutely. I've ridden buses all around. Yep.
Yeah, and but you enjoyed it as much as the National Hockey League, I'm sure.
I did, and sometimes some of the most unique things that happened were in the minors just because of all the different logistics that went into it.
Yep, exactly. Well, but I enjoyed the minors so much, I really did, and I was learning there, and you learned in the games, not in practice, but the games are what put you in a position to learn something.
Well, Mr. Goalie, Glenn Hall, this has been an amazing time talking with you, because it's not every day that someone gets to speak with just someone who quite honestly is a legend in our sport and in our position in our game, and to be able to talk to you one-on-one like this and just chat goaltending is amazing. I know people are going to enjoy it. So thank you so much for your time.
I don't do a good job of expressing myself, but I thank you for the opportunity, and it's nice to talk to, it's always nice to talk to a goalkeeper, and two goalkeepers are talking, defensemen come around. We always were polite, and we would tell the defensemen that if we were talking too fast for him, we could slow down. So you remember that when you're with a defenseman and a goalkeeper.
Huge thanks to Mr. Goalie Glenn Hall for joining 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. If you like the show, please remember to subscribe, leave a rating, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, any of those places. Thanks for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.